This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi and continuing coverage of the case against Karen Reed.
Another week down in the trial of Karen Reed. It's only been 2 weeks, right? Is that what we're on?
That was the third full week.
Okay.
So like the first, remember we, I don't think we went on Monday. It started on Tuesday.
Yeah.
That wasn't a full week. And so we've had 2 full weeks in the 4 days.
Yeah. It's been feeling like months.
No question, dude.
I know you're covering it live every day. It's been a lot. I'm just going to throw it to you. And since we last talked, how do you think it's going thus far for both sides? Let's start for the defense of Karen Reed.
For the defense, you know, I think in terms of the if I'm sticking to this week, I feel like, you know, Yuri Bukenik or Bukenik, however you want to pronounce it, is, I mean, it was clearly the position of Hank Brennan that he was going to be put on the stand to take the bullets for the whole team.
Yeah.
It seems pretty clear to me that they're not going to be calling Proctor in their case in chief. I'd be surprised if they did at this point, because I mean, he's just had Bukenik up there taking all the heat for all the cops.
Yeah.
And I thought in terms of like an evaluation, I think that Jackson's been very efficient. I think he's been even keeled. He hasn't been, you know, trying to be overly dramatic, you know, because there's a lot of points to be scored for the defense with regards to the investigation, man. I mean, no matter what you think about the case overall, I mean, if you're looking at it honestly and you're walking away from the trial thinking that was a good police investigation, you're fooling yourself,
because
it just wasn't. You know, it's like, I've got enough cop friends and cop colleagues and in the YouTubes, and I have yet to meet one cop that's been like, that was a great investigation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's how it should be done. So in terms of Jackson's ability to be able to get these finer points out, I think he's done a really good job at it. You know, the thing about that is that you have to wonder, you know, are they going to be able in summation to tie that up so that it makes sense for them? Because really what they're doing through all of Bukenik, or how do you say, you go Bukenik or do you go Bukenik?
Bukenik is what I've been saying.
Yeah. I've been floating between the two, you know, but they need to be able to make sure that the jury understands the significance of what they're trying to do. And really the entire thing has been revolving around the Bowden defenses, which is where, as a defense team or a defense lawyer, you're attacking the investigation mm-hmm. by law enforcement. So, and that's where this thing lives. And for the defense, in order for them to be able to get into their third party culprit stuff during their case in chief, they have to be able to establish through Bowden that there's a nexus between the people in that house and the crime. And if Canone feels like they've done that sufficiently during the defense's case in chief, they'll be able to get into it. If she doesn't, they won't. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, really that's what they've had to focus on. In terms of strategy, I think the defense has been way more tailored than they were in the first trial, which you'd expect from both sides. Mm-hmm. You expect a more tailored prosecution as well as a defense. And when you got a second bite at the apple, because, you know, you can look at everything that was done the first time, you can watch, you know, they've got the ability these days. It's not like the old days. They go on YouTube and watch the whole damn trial.
Yeah.
You know, they can watch the demeanor of every witness. They can watch every single cross, every single direct, you know, so you would expect them to come into this thing, both sides, raring to go and having tightened the belts and gotten rid of the fat and just said, all right, this is what we're going to do. And when you talk about Brennan, I mean, he's trimmed a ton of fat mm-hmm. from that case. You know, he's trying a vastly different case than Lally is.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, yesterday it was obviously fascinating with, you know, with Yuri reading all the text messages between Higgins and Karen, you know, and it's like, you're sitting there, you're kind of wondering, like I saw your clip on it, your take on it. I I have a different take on it, but I think that it's a fair take that you had, you mm-hmm. know, in terms of what kind of in your mind you think that means in terms of those words and what Karen's motivation might have been.
Yeah. It doesn't make her a killer in what I was talking about with, because I was talking about narcissistic type personalities and what she's talking about with John. But again, it goes to the pattern is what I was trying to point out. And that clip is on Twitter and whatnot, or X.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, from my perspective, it's like, I think ultimately the import of that for the defense is to really show, and I believe that it does show, that clearly she didn't have any intent on killing John if the relationship was ending.
Yeah.
Meaning she, whether it be Brian Higgins or whoever it's going to be, she had options. She, mm-hmm. she could clearly get another dude if she, you know, so I think that ultimately the purpose of the defense really trying to put that all in is to show, okay, well, we're going to get rid of the second degree murder in terms of her having this kind of like burning desire to end John's life or some kind of revenge theme. And I think that that served the purposes. The thing that you have to wonder, and I was wondering aloud during my live, I'm like, if it's a close case in deliberations, if the jury is sitting on the fence, and, you know, I've just seen it too many times in trials that I've tried myself where I've had defendants that I've had to put on the stand against my, mm-hmm. my will, but yeah. it was necessary. And, you know, if it's close and they have a dislike for the defendant, mm-hmm. I mean, that, because we're dealing with human beings as jurors, can play against you. I mean, yeah. that's just facts. And when you combine the clips, you know, they're just not putting her in a good light. And you combine it with the fact, if you've got, you know, like a juror or two that is a person who's been scorned in a relationship, mm-hmm. and that makes them feel a certain way. I mean, you have to worry about that if you're being honest about it. I mean, sure. you have to think about that. And, you know, the defense, I'm sure, talked about it ad nauseum. Mm-hmm. You know, this isn't they were shooting from the hip. I'm sure all the lawyers in that room had many discussions about the potential pitfalls and the potential positive aspects that getting that stuff in, and they weighed it and they decided that they were going to, you know, go full Monty on that thing and just have the whole conversation laid out there, which took hours mm-hmm. to listen to it all. So, I mean, ultimately, you know, I mean, how it's going to end up playing out is yet to be yeah. determined. And it's those 12 people in that box are the only, none of us out here matter.
No.
None of us. No. You know, no, it's only those 12 people in the box that matter in terms of how they're going to take it.
True. With all of the clips that have been played, and there's still, I'm sure, more to come. At this point, it really looks stronger to me than ever before that Karen Reed had knowledge that John was injured. Whether she wants to admit she hit him or not, I don't know. I mean, she even told her dad that she thought she hit something. So there's a lot of things out here that show Karen hit somebody. Now, I completely agree. Not intentional. But drunk, angry, whatever the hell it was, she hit him. I'm not doubting that anymore. Just because she said it herself so many times in so many different ways. And she's the only one who had knowledge of where he was. I mean, the list goes on and on and on and on. How are you on that? Are you feeling like, okay, this woman clearly has consciousness of guilt at this point? I mean, every which way you turn it, this is not how someone who doesn't know anything acts. It just seems so clear to me that she hit him. Again, not intentional, but she hit him. And what is so sickening about this whole damn thing is that she has that knowledge, and it has caused this chaos to all these other people's lives rather than owning this was a horrible accident. I don't think a jury is looking at this in any other direction at this point. I mean, shitty police work. Yeah. I understood more of it with the weather, the way that they described it this week, though, too.
Yeah, I mean, I'm obviously on the opposite side of that.
Yeah.
You know, and my thing is, I just follow the science on the case, man. Like I've been trying cases for too long to know that, you know, what people say in high pressure, high trauma situations just.
But it's not high pressure. At the moment, I get the insanity. I get, you know, in the moments that she's freaking out. But we're talking months and months and months and months, an interview, and her story changes every time.
Yeah, I think that the takeaway from that is that it's the opposite of what you're saying. I think what that means is she has no idea.
Well, you know what I mean? I think that could be very well true. I mean, I don't know that what she's saying is ever accurate either. I've said that too. I said much of what she says, she has this story, she has that story, they're all changing. What is the real one? I don't know that any of them are the real one with what she's saying. I think it's a guess. I don't think it's a wild guess. I think it's a guess based on what she knew, what the situation was, and put the pieces together and said, okay, this, but she can't have it both ways. She can't be saying, this is where I left him on the left side of the yard, where she clearly talks about the yard being a postage stamp. And this is where she last saw him, was over there, not on the right side, on the left side. But then she still is hanging her hat in court the other day, walking out. I saw him get in the house. Well, what is it, Karen? Because you've said every other thing too. So
yeah, I mean, what is it? But those are going to be her cross to bear, you know, if and when she takes the stand. You know, again, yeah, as a defense attorney in this case in particular, you know, I would be dreading the concept of having to put her on the stand. But I mean, the fact of the matter is that you've got a situation wherein, you know, talking about you can't have it both ways. You can't have it where, you know, you're lining her up as being heavily intoxicated by showing hours of, you know, P.F. McCarthy's in the waterfall and going through drink by drink, and her, this is her pouring it into the drink. She's got, you know, counting her drinks. She's
and lying about thin. That, lying about giving 20 stories on that too. I mean, everything is 20 different stories for her. Every element of this, like, is a different story.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Brewski and the Hidden Killers podcast.